Welcome to the Wealth Building Made Simple podcast with Philip Washington Jr. Today's episode is brought to you by StonehillWealthManagement.com. Today, Philip talks about Finance 101. Philip Washington Jr. is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. And now, here's Philip.
We are back with another episode of Wealth Building Made Simple. Again, brought to you all month by About Mansfield Podcast, the information source for everything going on about Mansfield. Listen, if you live in the DFW area and you don't know what Mansfield is doing, you need to check it out. And if you want to know what they're doing, you check out this podcast, right? And if you're visiting from other places and you never heard of Mansfield, then, you know, that's like not hearing of New York City in 1700. I know that was a big stretch. Depends on your time frame, right? I'm zooming out 300 years from now. Anyway, about Mansfield Podcast. It's also brought to you by Stonehill Wealth Management, my wealth management company, where we help clients invest their money for the future with wisdom, foresight, and lots of emotional intelligence. Let's get down to the show. Finance, we're talking about, we're doing Finance 101. It might be 201 or 301, right? Because we're going to go basic and then a bit deep, but we're talking about finance, right? Like finance. I mean, like the core building blocks of finance, which is important so you can understand a bit better how finance changes over time. And so let's first start, right? Because, you know, finance or investing or using your money to grow it is all about protecting your purchasing power, right? So a simple example might be, imagine you have $10 million, right? $10 million worth of assets. And I picked that number because that's the number that for most of us, we can live off $10 million and that will have us have a comfortable life. And so conventional thinking says, oh, I got $10 million, right? I can put it away somewhere where it's safe and I don't need to worry about it. And that idea is just a false idea, right? The idea was built in the time frame when, like, America was the reserve currency, and all the world was saving in dollars, and we had relatively low debt. So it's sort of like a sweet spot of balance, right? But if you look at the total picture, at least for American civilization, right, we're probably not going to live in that sweet spot for a long time because, you know, it was a lot of things that needed to happen, meaning like that was not the case for other people in other countries, right? And I won't get into the background of how we got to the sweet spot, but the point is you need to have a period of time where the currency is actually like not depreciating a lot, right? And so that's just not normal for debt-based systems, right? When you have a debt-based monetary system, which is the global financial system based on debt, then the value is always changing relative to other things, right? Said even simpler, if you think of the currency, it's not a solid foundation. It's a moving target because the currency in a debt-based system is always set to become worth less over time, right? And so if you're putting things that are considered safe, right, all safety means in finance is it's like an established idea. So like equate the word safe whatever haircut you used to wear back in high school, right? That's the equivalent of safe. And so, like, what people say is, I want to get this magic number, right? And then I want to, like, put it in the equivalent of, like, I'm going to go get a safe haircut that I had in high school. Well, like, the world's moved forward, right? And as the world keeps moving forward, that haircut becomes less and less cool, right? The way that translates into finance is those safe assets are like the old world, right? You're putting it in an old world that's inflating away. And right, if you have enough money to where you could, the inflation doesn't eat up all your purchasing power before you die, then that may be fine, right? Meaning, like, if $10 million when you die at 40 can only buy what, you know, can only buy $4 million worth of goods when you started, but you still make it and you're still good, then you might be like, that's fine. And that's okay, but that is not a wealth-building mindset, right? And there's all kinds of things that can go wrong that may make that number, like, way lower than what you may think. And so we're talking about wealth building. So we're talking about moving our money with the times. And so this is the core of finance, right? The core of finance is saying, I want to change with the world. I want to move forward with progress, right? I don't want to stay stuck in the past, right? And so it's important to understand there's lots of different assets, but I sort of, in my mind, organize them into two different categories. I call it hard money, which is, people mostly associate hard money with commodities, but it's not specifically commodities. It's money that is hard to reproduce, right? So I like to think of hard to replicate technology. And technology is not limited to, like, software, right? Technology can be something as simple as, like, when we learn how to, you know, use fire, right? Or when we learn how to package goods and food, right? Technology can be, it's more like a new knowing that everybody hasn't figured out yet. And so if most people haven't figured it out yet, they definitely haven't figured out how to manipulate the thing to do wrong, right? So I call hard money, money is hard to produce. Now, you know, gold is typically seen as hard money, right? And that's hard money because it takes a lot of money and energy to produce gold. There's only a limited amount because you need a starter blow up, you know, to get the gold, right? So it's really hard to reproduce. But hard money can also be, and it's relative, right? Because it's all relative. But you look at the value of NVIDIA, and people go, well, why is NVIDIA worth so much? Well, because of, like, their network, right? They built a very good niche around designing GPUs and other different software chip thingies for everybody using them. And they built, like, this good team that's an expert in doing it, and everybody needs what they do, right? So even though now people are wanting to diversify away from having to rely on NVIDIA, right, that takes 3, 4, 5, 10 years to do. And so they're able to print, you know, print value, right, for a while because they have a hard to produce asset in NVIDIA shares right now. Now, artificial money, let me go back one more hard money, right? The ultimate hardest money that we have today, from my perspective, is, like, Bitcoin, because it's only going to be 21 million. And when you get into the protocol, basically no more can be produced, right? and there's all kind of mechanisms built into the protocol to have the community evolve with it and continue to protect it. And that's a whole podcast episode, but, like, that's the hardest money because, like, you can't produce any more of it. Artificial intelligence or artificial money is money that's relatively easy to produce, right? Which are, as a category, that's going to be, like, stock, shares, currencies, bonds. And so some people might say, Philip, you just said NVIDIA was a hard money asset, right? Well, because it depends. So let me go deeper. It's like, if you were to say stock in AT&T or Verizon, right? It's easy now to spin up a wireless company. That's relatively easy. And so they don't really have a competitive advantage, right? Because they can, like, the individual companies can create more shares. But when I talk about hard money versus artificial money or easier money to reproduce, it's more like, is there a competitive advantage protecting the value that this company gives to the market, right? And there's no real value that a cellular company gives to the market anymore because it's super easy. Or let's say a lemonade stand. Anybody can set up a lemonade stand. And so that's like easy money to reproduce. You look at government money, right? Governments really don't have that much control over their money because the banks create money when they lend out. And it's super easy for a bank to lend out, right? And the governments accommodate it, right? But the governments are able to like reproduce money relatively easy. They're government money. And so that's artificial money. And one of my favorite Bible verses you hear me is if you're building a balance sheet, just like you build a house with a solid foundation, you want to build your balance sheet with a solid foundation, right? Meaning like if you want to get really, really wealthy, you want to own like the hardest assets, right? And at the top of your thing, you may use artificial assets, but they're going to be less longer term because here's what actually happens, and this may help people understand why VC funds have sort of like a 7 to 10 year lifespan for technology is because, let me explain it simply. It's sort of like if you have an idea, and it's a new idea, and then you're executing on the idea. At first, like everybody thinks you're crazy, and then at first nobody knows about it. Then when they find out about it, they think you're crazy, and then the idea starts working. And then you start making a lot of money. And then like other people say, oh man, this guy is smart. Let me go ahead and copy. So then they copy you, but you got a pretty good advantage. But at some point, there's going to be so much money thrown at the solution to capture some of those gains and profits you're making that it eats away at your profits, right? And so those new competitors eat away at your profits and create more supply for that value to the market, right? And so that asset that you had is no longer scarce, and so it has a lifespan. So let's call it 10 years, 15 years. Like it depends on the situation, the technology situation. But in general, right, when you're investing in new ideas that are initially hard to reproduce, in about a decade, it's going to be people are going to crack the code, and it's going to be pretty easy to reproduce. But you can make a lot of money in that 10-year time frame as a VC, right? And then you could probably stretch it out to 2 decades where you don't make as much money as the first decade, but you can make a lot, you know, significant gains in that second decade as well. So let's go backwards, right? What I also want to make sure is when I delineate it, it doesn't mean if you're dealing in like artificial money, you still can't make money. I'm delineated because, right, my safe money, what I consider safe, protected from inflation, is going to be hard money, hard to reproduce. That's my longer term money. But again, for a decade time frame, 2 decade time frame, I'll look at artificial money, right, because that money is used to bring innovation and better quality of life to humans, right? So you put that money to work and you get paid for it. And so when you have man-made money or artificial money, which is what I call man-made money, you create that value by, again, either like intellectual know-how. You can create it through branding and propaganda. A good one is, let's say like t-shirt companies, right? It costs them nothing to make a t-shirt. It's a commodity, but branding makes it feel scarce because of the way it makes people feel, right? Violence is the one that governments use, right? Governments say, if you don't use our money to pay us in taxes and all of our services, then we can be violent against you, right? Cartels, that's what John D. Rockefeller did. That's what OPEC does. Collusion, just power. But I call the artificial money is the value is held up in a sort of Ponzi scheme type way. And I don't mean that negative. What I mean that is you have to continue to input, like the violence, the cartels, the collusion, the branding, the power to keep it together. And that's just not long-term sustainable, right? Because eventually when you, it's like holding a balloon underwater, right? You push something down for too long, it's going to violently erupt the other way. Versus if you have something that is on the opposite end of the spectrum, right? So when I talk about the hardest money, you know, you talk about something that is very tough to replicate. And I'll use Bitcoin as an example of what I mean, because it has natural scarcity, right? Which means like it's physical scarcity, meaning like in the quantity of it, it's only going to be 21 million. And then the mental scarcity is like you have a lot of smart minds that are attracted to it and that are working on it. And it's sort of, at least Bitcoin specifically works reverse to a lot of things that I see, because it's like, because it's only going to be 21 million and because of the way the system is set up, it's like, if somebody wanted to find technology that can break and hack into the network, that's going to be tough because you got like the miners that are like the biggest hardware buyers, and you got the hardware sellers that are tied to the system, and they have a lot of money. And it's like a, like if somebody like I'm trying to say like there's a lot of money in the system, and if there's better computers that can do better than the computers that those who are protecting the system are using, they're just going to buy those computers, right? Because let me say it a different way. It's really hard to come to America and overtake America, right? Because we got a lot of money, talent, freedom, right? It's just hard to come into America and take what America has. That's the same thing with, and the thing about Bitcoin is it's attracting more and more money into the system because it's so scarce in a world where there's relatively easy ways to create money. It's attracting more and more people because that problem's getting worse and people are more attracted to this problem. And so like, and then you tie the mental scarcity of human innovation to like physical scarcity, meaning like in order to, Bitcoin has like a proof of work system, which means like in order to mine more Bitcoin, which is like going to be super, super profitable and maybe more super profitable over time, they're basically like the police, the law folks that protect the security of the system. It requires a lot of energy to run a Bitcoin mining operation, which is similar to what had kept gold in check, meaning like gold was scarce, cost a lot of energy to mine. And so like it was really hard to like just mine up more gold. Like a regular person couldn't do it because you had to buy all the equipment, get the talent, and do it. And so that's Bitcoin is like the opposite example of like man-made security. It's security that's built into focusing energy of people and then focusing like physical energy of like you know, gold to run the software. So I'm giving those two examples because that's sort of like a, as an investor, I'm always looking out going, how am I going to, what's my relatively most scarce money? What's my relative most abundant money? And then how do I want to build the portfolio, right? And then there's time frames as well. What I've noticed that very successful, wealthy people do is their goal is to store their longest term wealth in the hardest assets that they can find. So that's why you see rich people buying like scarce art, real estate in strong economic centers, gold, companies that have a monopoly that the world doesn't know about. So I go back to Tesla, NVIDIA, those type of companies. Different than like a monopoly where Apple is right now, where it's, I still like Apple, but it's sort of on the decline because the monopoly is known and certain. But again, that Apple stock is further down the stack than like real estate in New York, for example. And real estate in New York is less scarce than gold, right? And gold is less scarce than Bitcoin, right? So it's all relative. But when you understand the capital stack or the collateral stack, because collateral is the foundation of people's balance sheet, which is how you get people to give you money for more investments. Then you go, oh, okay. So like cash, you know, companies that are gonna be competed with in 10 and 20 years are more scarce than cash, but less scarce than this, right? So then so when people ask, hey, because this is important for people to say, oh, Philip, when are you going to sell Bitcoin? Or when are you going to sell your property? Like, never. Like, that's the exit. You know what I mean? Like the entry point is, like, the income I earn, right? And then I may put it in cash for short term, right? Then I may go up the chain. I might say, all right, let me look at my longest term, hardest asset. What is the expected return on that, right? And so my conservative estimation of Bitcoin for 2 decades for me, I think it's going to be better, but I just use 30% a year as like a number, right? Because that, and people are like, where you get the number from? Because that's what venture capitalists on average say the industry earns, the ones that are good. And I think Bitcoin's going to blow it out the window. And I got other ways I got to that, but let's just pick that. And so then if I'm looking in the less scarce assets, I'm going, this needs to really do better than 30% a year for the next decade for me to not put this in this super scarce asset that can't be replicated. You know, so it gives me a sort of a hurdle rate or a benchmark to organize my thoughts around what I'm going to invest in, right? And it also gives you an idea of like the health of the economy, because when I don't see a lot of things that are beating that hurdle, like when the market is depressed, there are a lot of things that can do better than 30% a year, right? And I want to be diversified. But as things become more inflated, I go, man, things are getting less attractive. I'm going to store more stuff in this hard asset, right? Which is the equivalent of how people think cash is, but cash is not hard, right? And so the conservative thing to do is sort of a flip of what you think conservative is. The conservative thing to do is put it in hard assets, not cash, in an inflationary monetary system. That's what I'm trying to explain. You and I may gotta do this again, but I feel like that is the mindset change that I feel like is needed to become a excellent investor, is saying, oh, right, risk is not volatility. Risk is, can the asset I own be reproduced easily? The volatility is just the function of the market finding equilibrium, right, over time. So say something like Bitcoin that's very volatile. It's just the transition. It's sort of, I was talking to my, I was talking to some parents that I knew, and I told them that thing, and I went, and they went, yeah, it's just, it, you know, this investment is just so volatile. I just really can't do it. Like, it just stresses me out. And I was like, I said, the investment's not really volatile. It's just the market mind moving. And they were like, what are you talking about? Because, you know, they know me. Like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I said, the market is like the collective consciousness of all people involved in it. And when you get a new idea that is amazing, that's great, even if you know it, it's still going to be a mentally volatile idea. I think about it as a parent. I look at my kids. I love my kids. I have zero doubt that my kids are going to be smarter, faster, stronger, have a better quality of life from, you know, than me, because they come from me and their mom, and we're giving them a strong foundation to do better. I don't have any, there's no question about that, right? And we're doing a good job of parenting them, I feel like. So there's no question about that. But it doesn't mean day to day my mind doesn't do this, right? Because I have fears, worries, they do things, right? I want, you know what I'm saying? But long term, I'm good. But you know, until they are doing the things that I know they can do independently of me, I'm going to have that mentally volatility on the way up. And that's how I feel about a scarce, hard asset that can't be reproduced. Is it's not about the volatility. The volatility is a natural function of like a new idea coming to the marketplace, that everybody's coming to their own conclusion of individually, of it being better, you know. But the safety for me is like, how hard is the asset? If it's hard to reproduce, right, and it's better than the alternative that you're looking at, it's a better idea, then like that's super safe for me. So hope this helps. Until next week, enjoy yourself.
Philip Washington Jr. is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Past performance is not indicative of future performance.